Hi everyone, this is the Age Stage on RPPFM 98.7 and 98.3. Always great to have your company. Thank you very much indeed for tuning in across the Mornington Peninsula and far beyond. We're on air, we're online, and we're on the World Wide Web. And of course, we hope that you're enjoying our podcasts as well. The Age Stage, a program which is designed for older Australians, proudly supported and very generously supported by The Village Baxter, The Village Glen, and Encore Living for that regional alternative. I'm Brenda Telfer. Joining me, she does every week in the co-hosting chair, is Paula Dunn. Paula, welcome once again.
Lovely to be here.
Thank you very much indeed, Paula. I hope you had a pleasant week.
I did. Lovely. And do you know that John Lennon actually turned 77 yesterday?
I know.
Yes.
It was incredible.
A milestone. Talking about our song that play.
Indeed. Yeah. Joining us in the studio, our special guests, as usual, we have Stuart Shaw, who's General Manager of Village Baxter, and Damien Malone is back, Operations Manager. He's becoming very accustomed to the studio, and we're delighted to welcome him from Residential Community Services at Tea Tree. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you very much indeed for returning.
Hi, Brendan. Hi, Paula.
Hello.
Hi, all. Thanks for having me.
Yep, we're back.
We're back.
Prediction, Damien.
Yeah, Peter will be back next week.
Peter will be back.
Peter who?
Yes, remember him. Well,
What did he do?
Damien's done so well while Peter's been away, and yeah. So thank you very much indeed for putting up with us again, Damien. We know that you're very busy down there with Residential and Community Services at Tea Tree.
It's a beautiful facility.
It is a beautiful facility. It's a glorious facility. It's an incredible facility, in fact. I was very interested in visiting it some months ago. Today we're going to rejoin a discussion which we started some weeks ago. In fact, it was Tom Camp, that elusive Tom Camp, who theoretically was going to have been here with us, of course. Tom
so
from Encore.
Throws a hand grenade in.
He does, lobs it, and then typical Kiwi. But anyway, he's not here. But you were making some very passionate pleas to the government, because essentially this discussion started about 3 weeks ago, Stuart, did it not? When basically we were looking at responsibilities, we were looking at the huge numbers that were going to be required in this sector, and we went back to the very basis of what this program was all about, the tsunami which is waiting to hit us older Australians and future generations. How do we pay for it? Where do we pay for it? And at what sort of levels do we pay for it? And so you were getting on to a notion that you think it's going to have to come back to the government. We can get on to a couple of those issues in just a moment. Mm-hmm. But in particular, the point that you were making last week, which I thought was very interesting, was we need something where the government bows out. It removes itself to a degree from the accommodation equation, I think is what you were saying.
Yeah, there's really two sides to that, Brendan, that government currently control accommodation and they shouldn't. You know, so I start from that as, you know, just one of the core planks.
But why shouldn't they, Stuart? Why is that?
Because if you look at aged care, we all build a very similar product. So Tea Tree is not a lot different to the Village Baxter. It's not a lot different to, you know, they might do it nicer.
Relative terms.
Relative term. You know, basically it's 18 square metres, 4 square metres for an ensuite. And so the products are the same, which takes a lot of creativity out of different models that can be provided. You know, government legislated some years ago to say, you know, shared accommodation is not popular in their eyes, and yet in some instances shared accommodation can be in the best interests of the consumer. But, you know, that is really taken out of the mix now. Particularly, I mean, if you've got someone with a dementia, it is more likely that they used to grow up with their sister or their brother in the same room as them, and now in a room by themselves, and they feel caged. There's no companionship in there, and it's very difficult for some of those people with that type of debility to actually integrate well. You know, they want to be social. But
wouldn't that be a stronger argument, forgive me for interrupting your train of thought, but would that not be a stronger argument for the government to get involved, to offer it the paternal, the guiding hand of the government? Here, we can nurture you, we can look after you, you have special needs, you have special interests, therefore it is our responsibility to look after you, you citizen of...
As citizens of a country, government has a responsibility to provide us with care. They support care. They don't have a responsibility to provide us with housing, other than the very marginalised. You know, but, so everyone has the capacity so that's to a provide accommodation.
So we're getting into the realms of sort of social philosophy here as well, aren't we?
Yes.
And if you looked at, say, the Scandinavian models, where they would say that the government has a very intrusive role to play in terms of looking after its citizens. So this is a much more sort of hands-off, laissez-faire philosophy that you have.
If you look at the Scandinavian models, most of the Scandinavian countries have a lot higher tax rate than we do in Australia. And I'm happy to go down the track of saying if we want that sort of model, then the people, being us, the voters, should have a right to say whether we should pay additional tax. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite relaxed about that because I actually think there is an argument that says we are not paying enough tax to provide the level of services that we want as a consumer.
And indeed, that's exactly the point that Damien was making last week. I mean, you're basically, your cloth is cut to a degree, and what you do on your $200 a day is sensational, Damien. How do you provide the level of services that you do at that rate?
Absolutely. So I guess pooling of your resources is the most important thing for us as an operator, is to maximise the income we can get, to pool that and then use it as a shared resource across everybody, making sure that areas where you can run at a more affordable level, you do, so that you can then put the other money back into, particularly care, I think, is one of those key areas.
Yeah. So cross-subsidising.
You're well under. Absolutely.
So your people are being cross-subsidised. So, Brendan, you know, we've sold your helicopter and other gizmos.
Thank you very much.
So you've paid a nice fee to come in, and we are cross-subsidising you for me because you have a greater capacity to pay. Now, government, if you then extrapolate that into community care, government has stopped that. You know, they've killed the concept of pooling of money and having shared resources between people, because now we have to account for every dollar that we spend on you, and what we don't spend on you goes back to the government.
Which is, an issue that you have with this government model, and you made that point very eloquently last week. You don't think that works in other sectors of, say, healthcare.
Yes.
Why should you be hamstrung by that yourselves?
Correct.
So you want to get rid of that notion as
well. So I would like to see government step back from accommodation and focus on providing the care component. Because everyone should... If you look at Medicare, Medibank, the MBS, that if you look at that process, everyone as a citizen has an entitlement to a level of care, whatever that is, be it in a public hospital, be it in a private hospital. Mm. And I would say aged care should have the same philosophy. Everyone is entitled to a degree of care. It needs to be a simpler model than we currently apply, but that does not include accommodation for most people. And if I can't afford to go to, you know, one of the places that charge a $2 million bond, and as there's one in Sydney, then I need to cut my cloth to suit. So I might need to go to a place that is less expensive, and that's my choice.
Or I might... Sorry, Paula.
Yep. I know what you're saying there, Stuart. My father was in Coppin up in Melbourne. And there had to be a bond put down, but there were people who had less than $40,000 in assets that could live in the same place, get the same care as he did, for just the part of their pension.
And that's legislated for every facility. Yeah, every area has a legislated ratio. Yeah. For the peninsula, it's around the 18%, and every facility is obliged to provide for 18% of their people who can't afford to contribute to their own accommodation.
So therefore the question is, why not get rid of your assets or whatever before you go into or think of going into such a facility?
And that again is a very philosophical argument that, and we've had that discussion, you know, internally between us as people, that if we've each had the same opportunity in life to earn an income, same education, let's say we're identical people, Damien being the good studious person that he is. He's saved his money because he knows what the future's going to hold.
Mm-hmm.
But me, well, I've been a happy-go-lucky sort of guy, you know, I spend what I've got and tomorrow will take care of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Why at the end of that time are we both then treated equally? We both get the same opportunity to go into the same aged care facility and we both have the same opportunity to contribute to our costs. Unfortunately, Damien's got money, so he's going to pay.
Mm.
I've blown mine, so I don't have to pay. And is that an equitable system? And it's an interesting debate philosophically to consider.
Mm.
Now, if you treat aged care as another element of Medicare, where, you know, here is the amount we're going to pay. So government currently does not know how much it is going to be liable for aged care, because you come in and under the current 64-tier schedule of fees, you will move from zero to 200 over time. If you simply said, scrap 64, that's a load of rubbish, it's too complex, establish, you know, a 5, 8, 10-tier system for care, and we will fit into one of those bands. Government then have a much better idea as to what it's going to cost people. You know, and if the top tier is $200 and the cost of care, the actual cost to deliver your care needs is greater than that, well, you will have to contribute more as a consumer unless you have nothing.
Mm.
And if you have nothing?
Then the Commonwealth needs to step in and provide for your needs.
How do they compensate the diligent saver in this circumstance and the dilettante that's blown it?
And that's the problem that exists currently. If you take it to an 8 or a 10 scale system, it is a lot fairer, because we all know that, okay, if we've got the same disability, so as our lives have paralleled each other, then we go into a residential facility, so we know we're getting $150 each or $200 each to meet the cost of care. Now, if my needs change and the government says, well, sorry, we can't afford to pay anymore, then I need to either have a look at what I'm currently receiving to see whether I can receive more care if it's structured differently, or whether something else needs to change. But I need additional money coming in to provide for my additional needs. And that's not a lot different to what happens now, but it's much more transparent. It takes the heat out of, you know, governments say that some providers are rorting the aged care subsidies, and it gets rid of all of that stuff because, you know, this is the subsidy. You've been assessed at a level 8, so you know that that's the subsidy that's fixed. It's not going to move from that unless your care needs deteriorate or increase, and you get to the maximum. So the maximum is currently $200. That could still be the maximum under the new system. But government can't then say to us, well, you've just got to keep on paying more, you know, as a provider, because they've locked us into $200 worth of care. That's fine. Here's your menu of things you can choose to get that $200 worth of care. If they want to provide more care, they need to look at how they're going to be prepared to fund that. So you've got a couple of different dynamics. One is to provide certainty for Treasury, who are the masters of all things government, so that there's a better handle on what Commonwealth outlays are going to be on aged care under a simpler system, which is less bureaucratic. You don't need to have ACFI validations. You don't need all the monitoring and all the other stuff that goes with that.
But it'd still have to be flexible, wouldn't it? Because of the fact that as human beings, we're living way longer than we ever have.
Sorry, I was just going to say, one of the things that we're seeing a lot more in a particularly residential aged care now is the differentiation between the consumer that comes in is getting less. People are staying at home with community services so much more longer. There's an average life stay of about 18 months now when you move into residential care, with cognitive deficits, dementia being one of the main criteria now that moves someone into care.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not seeing that vast variety of the very low person that's feeling a bit socially isolated coming into care versus the person that's full nursing care.
Mm.
Most people have capped out their ability to live at home in their own environment and need that high level of care. Our costs are becoming more and more a fixed cost. And you know, we spend a lot of time on submitting claims, submitting funding, going through reviews and all that kind of thing, which could be spent in direct care if there was a fairer system of funding.
So are you saying, you know, at what would have been low care coming in at high care? And having that sort of care?
Absolutely. So things that they differentiate is on whether people need assistance with their meals, whether they need assistance with care. It's rare for someone to come into residential aged care now that doesn't need assistance with their hygiene. Otherwise, they'd be at home living in the community with community services. Yeah. Mobility assistance and being with someone. They differentiate the cost of actually holding the person to help them walk or having someone have to stand side by side and walk with them. They're funded differently. Mm. But it's still the same cost to me as a provider because my staff members there with the person for the whole time, and there's very few people that come into residential care now that aren't a high falls risk that don't need the extra level of supervision. So these things that they used to differentiate the costs in residential care aren't really differentiators anymore.
But you're seeing them for less amount of time now in your care facility though, because they're coming in later, is that right?
Absolutely.
They're presenting later.
So they're coming later, they're coming sicker, they're staying a shorter period of time.
And they're coming later because it is their choice, or this is the emphasis of government policy making them come in late?
Probably both.
Absolutely. People want to, you know, every study you see, people want to age and possibly die in their own home. Right. And that's their preference. And that's what the government's moving to with their home and community services. And you know, that's a great system to have. But then we still need to recognise when people then do come in, if they can't survive at home anymore, that we have to be appropriately funded. We have to cut down that red tape and the amount of work that goes into getting the funding so that we can actually focus on providing the care.
Can I challenge one of those assertions? It is cheaper to provide care for somebody in their home if you look at that in isolation of total society. Because if I keep someone in their quarter acre home tied up, it's generally going to be in a city. It's not going to be out of suburban. So those areas are not being renewed with younger families having the opportunity to buy into those areas, where there's schools and there's hospitals and there's everything that public transport, which means those people get pushed further and further out. Whilst we tie up that quarter acre block, it would be, if you look at it from a total government perspective, freeing up those homes to provide urban renewal where those services are all located. I mean, that's one of the roles that retirement villages plays. In terms of the total infrastructure. So it's actually trying to get better value out of your existing infrastructure rather than closing it down and pushing it further
but
out.
But that's been the way for as long as houses have been built, hasn't it?
Yeah, but that's because one arm of government only looks at an issue without looking at the totality of what's good for our society. You know, if we push people out to Pakenham, and Nunnagoon, wherever we may push them out beyond the traditional fringes of the society. Okay, so we're going to have to extend our public transport.
Mm.
So more trains, more buses.
More jobs.
More jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But those jobs are going further out or people are commuting further in because the jobs are largely fixed currently. You have a boost when you create the infrastructure, but then in the longer term, you're not actually creating new jobs that will contribute to the overall benefit of us as a country. You know, we're good at building, get it done, but what happens after that?
What does happen after that? And we'll find out what happens to all that when we come back after a break, because this is the Age Stage on RPPFM, and today we're speaking to Stuart Shaw, who is the General Manager of Village Base, and Damien Malone as well, Operations Manager at Residential Community Services at Tea Tree at Village Glen. Paula Dunn is in the studio with me. I'm Brendan Telfer. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to resume more of this. It's getting quite philosophic in here today, and we need to thrash it out. This is The Age Stage, a program that looks at matters and issues affecting older Australians. Tom Camp set off a debate a couple of weeks ago when he brought some pretty frightening numbers into the studio, which he suggested we needed to discuss. And we're continuing that conversation today with Stuart Shaw, General Manager of the Village Base, and also Damien Malone, Operations Manager from Tea Tree Village Glen. Paula Dunn is here with us as well. And just before the break, Stuart, we were talking about some of the sort of social infrastructure and the way that the government's got to think about the future. We were discussing earlier on as well the Scandinavian model. There is a tsunami coming. You will assure us in terms of aged care, what we do and how we pay for it. And one of the options was perhaps we might have to think about a new tax structure. So if the government's going to be bringing in, well, if it's going to be bringing in a whole lot of new measures about the way and where its responsibility goes and lies, somebody ultimately is going to have to pay for this. Our grandparents, us, our children are going to have to find a way of looking after us. Do they have to pay more tax to do that in the next 10, 20 years?
I've long been of a view that if governments are not very good at selling messages, and we never quite feel these guys have told us the truth about where we're at as a country, because our political cycle and the three-year terms says, okay, year one we'll try and do the nasty things, year two we'll try and get rid of it, and then in year three we're in election mode.
Mm.
Rather than all sides of politics agreeing, okay, this is in the best interests of the country, and get out there and sell the message to say that if we're going to provide the level of social support that currently exists, then we need to do a different tax structure or whatever the topic might be.
Have an aged care tax.
Yeah, there could be anything, but they need to go out and sell that to us, because as a community, I believe that we should then have a choice to say this is what we want. Or if we can't afford that as a country, then we need to lower our expectations for people. You know, if we can't afford to have, class sizes in schools at 12 or 15 pupils per teacher, if we can't afford that through our taxation dollars, well, we need to change that and say school sizes are going to increase and we need to be creative about that. We can't simply argue the toss to say, class sizes need to be 12 or 15 because that kids have the greatest chance. Who says that? I grew up in an age where that was not the case.
No,
and,
me either.
And, I think I turned out all right. Some would say I'm a rat bag, but Damien, I don't want to, But
So message is important. I 100% agree. I think the industry for a long time has talked to government about cost of care and studying cost of care. And the government's point of view is quite clearly, we don't want to do a cost of care study because we have a limited bucket of money that we can spend regardless of what the cost is. So the message, therefore, to the consumer has to be, you can't expect to get everything for the money the government's prepared to commit.
But the community does want everything it can possibly get. Yeah. It's the me generation. Mm. And that's why we have some of the stories that we're beginning to see creep into the media as well, where the crosshairs are well and truly on you guys, the providers. You're trying to make some money or at least cover your costs, and people are saying that you're driven by rampant profit and money. And this is going to be a discussion as well. This is really going to hit the fan the next few years as well, as people have to accommodate this new perception about what they're going to get.
Look, I've been in aged care for over 20 years, and I've worked for public, I've worked for private, I've worked for not-for-profit. I haven't seen those people that are just out rampantly making, all this money and just out for profit and not interested
but
in the resident.
But there are some who...
But that's what
at the top end of the scale. But for the majority of your average provider who's out there, they're doing it out of a sense of community service. They are trying to make a business out of it, so they should be expected to make a profit, because otherwise it would all fall back to the government to deliver, and the government can't do it either.
But that's why you have this radio program here. You know that to be true.
Yes.
You know that you're driven by an ethical sort of a sense of trying to create wellness and well-being amongst older Australians. But us consumer of modern media, we are sometimes getting another story that you're not that ethical and that you are basically looking at your bottom line more than our welfare.
Yeah, so there's a couple of issues in that, Brendan, that firstly, we're not particularly good or skilled at trying to explain a complex system to the community. Government have made the system complex, and government have very kindly put the emphasis back on us to sell the message. I mean, the message that government give to consumers is say, well, shop around. You too can change banks and choose a bank, and you can choose an aged care place that will provide you with a different level of service. The funding is the same, no matter whether you've gone to the Hilton or whether you've gone to, what's a hotel that would be the other end of a Hilton? Doesn't matter.
It's Crown.
Clearly an ugly experience at Crown, Ben. You weren't brawling one night there, were you? But, you know, government are not prepared to stand up and say, this is what you will expect to get for this level of subsidy. And Damien's perfectly correct that government shy away from doing a cost of care because it's not in their interest to actually be in a position to say, oh, it's really costing that much to do that, because that means that the emphasis will go back onto them to validate why they are underfunding that cost of care.
Well, in, sorry, Paul.
So that means we can't believe what they say.
Oh, no, government and no.
Ken White himself has said that, you know, we need to look at aged care as a business entity.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's the reality. He stated that. Yeah.
And I think at the moment they give us the ability to be flexible with our accommodation offering, and that there's the opportunity for someone to buy into whatever accommodation offering they want. We've got the ability to charge for different additional services, different meal quality, different activities and that kind of thing. The one thing they have got providers locked into is the cost of care, so that if I do want the registered nurse to be doing mum's medication, if I do want, I should be able to pay for that. But at the moment, care is one of those things that's locked down. And once we cap out our $200, we have to come up with a model that's affordable. Whereas if we were able to be more flexible on that front, you could go, well, actually, I will pay for the facility that offers that different higher level of service.
Yeah, I just think confusion is the solution at the moment.
It's convenient. You've experienced it firsthand.
I have, absolutely, yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is that later in the program, we're going to be meeting the head or the CEO of COTA, the Council of the Aging, Ian Yates, and he's just been given and has just been publicly making pronouncements about figures that David Tune has uncovered in his report, which has gone to the federal government. Alarming figures again, and it will be very interesting to hear what Mr. Yates has got to say. But in fact, you, Stuart, I think you're going to be meeting Mr. Tune later on this week anyway here in Melbourne.
He will be visiting the village tomorrow. And we look
that
forward to
nice.
That with a breakfast seminar commencing at 7:30. And we have around 30 people, including Damien and Peter and
we
all
didn't
the,
get
all
an
the
invite, Brendan.
No, we didn't. No. But anyway, again, some of the alarming figures as we just wrap up this segment with you today, Stuart, and also Damien. But according to Mr. Tune, 1.3 million Australians rely on government-funded aged care now, costing $20 billion annually. Figures by 2054, the Australian over 65 population will jump from 3.5 million to 9 million.
Wow.
And so those are some of the figures that he, I'm sure, and you will be discussing. We should probably come out with a tape recorder
should,
or at least
we?
Record
yeah.
the seminar yeah. and the sessions and turn it into an age stage special.
Could.
Something yeah. that we can think about in the next 24 hours before Mr. Tune's arrival. Gentlemen, Damien. It was your last appearance with us for a little while, but thank you.
Aww.
And thank you so much. It's been fantastic getting to know you, and your contributions to the program have been absolutely awesome
they
over
have.
The last few weeks. So thank you so
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having yes. me. I'm sure I'll be back at some point.
Oh,
I'm
yes,
pretty,
I think
I'm
you probably
certain
will.
Damien
will be back.
Damien Malone. Seasoned performer. You couldn't let him go.
Damien Malone, who is Residential and Community Services Manager down at Tea Tree. Thank you very much indeed. And, of course, to you, Stuart Shaw. Thank you very much indeed for your time once again.
I'll
here
get off my soapbox.
Well, no, we love it when you do, because with the passion and the urgency with which you speak, I just think it brings the whole program to alive. So thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brendan.
We'll see you again next week. Thank you very much. This is The Age Stage. Care Australia, or Care Connect at least, has been around for a while. They're looking at a slightly independent way of assessing alternate means of living as we get a little bit older. Delighted to say that we've got Sally Johnson, Marketing Manager of Care Connect, on the line. Sally, welcome, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us on The Age Stage.
Hi, Brendan. Hi, Paula.
Hi,
Thanks
Sally.
Thanks so much for having me.
Tell us a little bit about Care Connect then. I'm an organisation, you say, that is completely independent. So what does that mean for clients?
Okay, so fundamentally we specialise and our whole focus is working with people to enable them to stay living at home for life. Independent advice and guidance is what we actually give, plus also services to people. And their word independence, we sort of really pride ourselves on because we offer independent advisors that come out to people's homes and talk to them about the types of ways that they and government funding that they can actually access through their time at home, and also the services that they might actually need to live independently in their home.
It's a great concept. Is it really reflecting what the government wants to do in this area and it's being foisted upon us, or is this a genuine expression of what we as individuals in our community are wanting to do these days, live at home?
Both. All of our research says that people actually do want to stay living in their home and in their community. They don't want to go into a nursing home or residential care facilities. Now, that might suit some people, but the majority of people actually want to stay living independently in the home.
So, Sally, so what happens if a loved one's in hospital and the hospital is telling you that that loved one cannot go home? Are you an advocate there? Do you step in?
We can give advice around that, and certainly we do actually have a really great program in New South Wales called Compacts, and there are transitional care programs to enable people to transition from hospital to home. And what we find with our Compacts program is when you actually put services in, give advice and put services in place, people actually do transition back into their home really, really well, and they probably have less incidences after that. So we do advocate strongly for good hospital-to-home support, mm-hmm. but also planning. You know, we find that the majority of times that people end up in places that they don't want to end up, which is nursing homes or residential care facilities, is often when they have an incident or an accident. Mm. So thinking about your home, thinking about how you're actually living as you age, getting your family around and actually discussing it is really, really vital to enable people to remain living independently at home.
Tell me, Sally, how do you guys stay profitable? I mean, how do you pay the bills? How does your company survive, Care Connect?
Great question. We are a not-for-profit organisation, so we've been around for 20 years, and fundamentally our whole business has been working actively with the assistance of the government and being a provider of government-funded packages like a home care package or a Commonwealth home support package. We are extending into private services as well. So we work actively with clients, and our funding comes through partial payment of those packages. So our advisory aspect, so we have case managers or client advisors, as we like to call them. People don't like to be referred to as cases. So our client advisory hour is provided to clients, and out of those packages, money comes to us through that. So it's paid services.
The most successful use people are making of you then is that they obviously as a family have to get together, have a discussion, and then they call you in and you get involved in that discussion as far as maybe an elder parent or grandparent is concerned. How does it work?
Yeah, so we like to get people in early. So if people are really struggling, you know, it might be a family member that notices their mum or their dad or a partner that's really struggling at home, there is a wide variety of government assistance that people can actually access, and a lot of people don't actually know about it. The government changed over the health system February this year, so people now can have the choice of obviously the service provider they choose to administer their home care package. So one, it's a very good idea if you feel you've got somebody that wants to remain living at home, to give us a call or go and speak to their GP about how they can do that. If they give us a call, we'll give them free advice on how to access assistance. And if we think that they're eligible, we'll actually send out people to go and have a chat to them face-to-face, and we absolutely recommend if their family gets involved at that stage.
So what do you base that eligibility on, Sally?
Fundamentally, it's based on need. So mm-hmm. if people are really struggling, and there is a variety, like home care packages start, they're four levels, level one, level two, level three, level four, and it starts from low level need, and that's about $7,000 that the government will give a person, and that tends to be for low level services, like if you can't maybe do your gardening or you're struggling with home cleaning. So it's based on need. So an assessor will come out from the government and they will assess that need. And then they look at whether that person has got income. And income is basically, like if you're in a pensioner, most full-time pensioners, they don't have to contribute at all. But if you are deemed as earning an income, then you might have to contribute a certain amount of income towards that package. The maximum amount somebody would actually contribute is $10,000 per year. And packages go up to about $48,000. So it is certainly worth people's while to actually inquire to see whether they're eligible or not.
So that $7,000 package or $10,000 package is paid for by the person that's going to be receiving that care, is that right?
It's paid for by the government.
By the government so to that person?
To that it's paid, the person actually gets access to the money, but it is administered through a registered service organisation such as ourselves.
Okay.
So the process is that somebody, if they think, oh, how do I actually go about doing this, they could ring up an organisation such as ourselves, so we will provide them with information and advice. Then we would register them through an organisation called My Aged Care. Now, that is a government organisation and website. Mm. That they can get information.
And indeed, we've heard so much about My Aged Care and we've heard so much criticism of it as well. It's difficulty for negotiation by older people as well. But I believe that indeed the Minister has understood this and is trying to reform some of the processes within My Aged Care, Sally. So yes, we've come and we've got to know My Aged Care quite closely here on the station. Your business probably then has grown almost exponentially then as the government's pushed into this area. I mean, what's your sort of turnover these days compared to, say, a few years ago? You must be seeing massive growth.
Look, yes, we're growing slowly, actually, not massively, because it is quite restricted by the amount of packages that the government actually released. So, whilst, and I think this is the biggest problem, and probably why the government is being criticised a little bit, because they've released, I think there's about 100,000 packages throughout Australia. So we call them the golden tickets. You know, if you get a golden ticket, you're really lucky. Now, the government is releasing packages slowly, and obviously it's up to us to then prove our worth and make sure that we're doing a good job and people actually value the services and the value that they're getting from what we obviously deliver. So we are growing, but I think we've got now about 1,065 odd clients that we're obviously servicing in Victoria, New South Wales and Queensland.
How do people get in touch with Care Connect then, Sally?
We've got a direct telephone number, and that's easy to remember. It's 1-800-MY-CHOICE, or if people don't like using that name, it's 1-800-692-464, or they can Google Care Connect, or go directly to Care Connect, you know, www.careconnect.org.au. So we've got a good website that people can find out the type of services and the advice that we actually give people.
And you'd help people get through the portal as well, eh? My Aged Care portal as well as part of your services?
Absolutely, because that's what we're finding is the biggest thing. One, people don't understand about the packages that are available. They don't understand their eligibility, it's very, very confusing. And sometimes people are in hospital and they just want assistance, or they've got a sick parent or partner, and so it's a very troubling time sometimes for people. So yes, we will assist them, we'll talk to them and we'll register them, and then we will keep in contact. Often when somebody gets registered into My Aged Care, it goes into a black hole. But we will keep in contact with that person and let them know, because they go into a waiting queue. So once they're assessed, they're actually on a waiting list and they're waiting for a package to become available.
So do you think, Sally, it'd be a good idea to legislate that everyone of a certain age, say, I don't know, 75, should register and go onto that registry to be notified when needed for home care?
Oh, that's an interesting proposition. Then that will just explode. I think the system that they've got is actually not bad as far as people registering, but what I'd really like is service providers like us to have more visibility around clients that we're helping and where they are in the queue. Because a lot of people also want to pay for services themselves privately. They don't necessarily need the government assistance.
And indeed, that's where we come in, Sally, because we're here to try and help people understand some of these matters that are affecting older Australians and the tsunami that is about to hit us all as we get steadily older. Because the figures that we're quoting down here, 2054, the Australians over 65 population jumping from the current 3.5 million to 9 million. Mm.
Exactly. And I think that's why the government has done what they've done, to really put the power back into the consumer and give them more choice. Because I think they're realising that there's not enough aged care facilities or nursing homes to actually cope for people that are ageing. So we really are going to have to be more independent and live more, in our home as we obviously age. So we're really going to have to be quite resourceful and innovative in how we actually look after our ageing population.
And I think, as I think I said a couple of weeks ago in a discussion we were having, marketing of. I mean, a lot of people don't know these services even exist, as you said earlier. So, getting the word out there to let people know.
Exactly. It's been the best kept secret, I think.
Yeah, well, it shouldn't be, should it?
No, and we've been doing quite a few education forums in local community centres around the place just to educate people on the changes to the government and the fact that there is assistance, and that people, it's their right to actually inquire and know about it.
Mm, of course it is.
And also, people of this generation have worked really hard. They've paid their taxes. And a lot of people say, "Oh, well, I'm not worthy of it." Well, yes, you are. Mm. You have a right to actually access services to actually remain living independently in your home.
And this is how the age stage came about, because we want people to know their rights and what their entitlements are.
Yeah, and I actually think that this change has been great, because it gives consumers more choice, and they can actually select the provider that they actually want that looks after them. And that comes back to our independence. We really pride ourselves in giving good advice and independent advice, so people do know what they're eligible for, and also choice of services. Because a lot of organisations only offer services that they actually independently offer through their organisation, whereas we will actually go out and actively find services that are right for people. So, for example, if your dad really, really loves fishing, we will go and find out somebody that will actually take him out fishing.
Oh, okay.
Sounds awesome. Mm. Sally, once again, how do we get in touch with you and Care Connect?
So easiest way is phone 1-800-MY-CHOICE or go directly to www.careconnect.org.au.
Sally Johnson, Marketing Manager of Care Connect, thank you very much indeed for joining both Paul and me here in the studios today in the Age Stage. We appreciate your time and spending a few moments with us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sally.
Have a great day.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. And that just about wraps it up for this week's edition of The Age Stage. Thank you very much indeed for your company. I'm Brendan Telfer, Paula Dunn and myself and the rest of the crew will be back at the same time next week. Hope you can join us all again then.